They took the dead man's horse with them. That would allow Frank and his companions to push on without having to wait for the animal that had gone lame to heal completely. With the lame horse in tow, they searched for a place to fort up. Frank planned to go scouting for the smugglers and also for the gang of French-Canadian mixed bloods. But he wasn't going to set out on that mission until he had a safe place to leave Salty and Meg.
Métis.
What?
Those fellas who grabbed the two of you, that's what they're called. Métis. I don't know exactly where it comes from, but I've heard the word. They're the descendants of the early day French fur trappers and the Indians who lived here when the white man first came to this part of the world.
He recalled hearing something else about them too. Something that nagged at him as if it was important. But he couldn't quite remember what it was. They came to a ridge that jutted up abruptly from the relatively flat ground of the valley. It was too steep for the horses to climb, so they turned and rode along the ridge until Frank spotted a wide crevice that ran back into the rock, as if someone had taken a giant knife and tried to hack the ridge into two pieces. The crevice's opening was screened somewhat by trees and brush. Frank reined in and studied it for a while, deciding that with a little work, they could conceal the opening even more than it already was.
That's it. We'll put the animals in there, then drag enough brush into the mouth of the crevice that nobody will be likely to notice if they ride past.
I reckon that might work all right. Be a good place to fight off an attack, too. They couldn't come at you from but one direction.
That's what I was thinking. Come on.
Once they were through the screen of brush at the mouth of the crevice, they found that it formed a box canyon extending about 50 yards into the ridge. The canyon was approximately 20 yards wide at its widest point, narrowing down to nothing at the far end. A man could probably climb up and down the walls inside the canyon. A horse definitely couldn't negotiate them.
We'll have to have somebody standing guard all the time, but we can hold this place if we have to.
I agree. You and Meg can stay here while I try to find out why these mountains are so blasted crowded all of a sudden.
Don't you think it would be better if we all went looking for them smugglers and that gang of Métis or whatever you call them?
It's a one-man job.
Danged if you don't sound like all the other fellas I ever partnered up with. Always so dad-burned stubborn and determined to go it alone.
Don't worry, I'll come back for you.
Oh, I ain't worried. I know you'll come back. We got the grub.
Let's drag some more brush up to hide that entrance.
They spent the rest of the afternoon working to conceal and fortify the Box Canyon. Frank used the pack mules to drag some logs into the canyon. Then he and Salty stacked them 3 deep and 5 high to form a barricade of sorts, behind which they could kneel to fire their rifles if they needed to. By the time that was done, it was too late for Frank to venture out in search of either of the groups they'd encountered earlier in the day. He would start his search in the morning. As Frank sat watch, musing over his fate, he heard the rustle of footsteps behind him. Turning, he saw Meg coming toward him. Enough starlight filtered down into the canyon for him to recognize her slender figure.
What are you doing here? You're supposed to be asleep.
That's easier said than done.
Even from here, Frank could hear Salty sawing logs.
Yeah, I reckon you're right. He'll quiet down after a while, though.
She sat down on the piled up logs beside him.
I was thinking about what happened earlier today, Frank.
You mean when those fellas grabbed you and Salty?
Before that. I'm talking about when you and I walked up the creek from camp.
Frank thought that might be what she meant, although he'd hoped that it wasn't. He wasn't going to waste time pretending that he didn't understand.
We came mighty close to making a mistake there.
Would it really have been a mistake, Frank?
I think it would have been. Some things, it's just hard to get past.
Like the difference in our ages?
Yeah, that and the fact that I'm too blasted old and set my ways to ever settle down again. At least not until I get too decrepit to ride a horse. And you wouldn't want me then.
I'm not so sure about that. Anyway, you haven't heard me say anything about settling down, have you?
Well, that's what you deserve. A gal as young and pretty as you ought to have a husband and a home. A passel of kids, too.
That sounds good. If I ever met the right man.
You will. That is, if you ever stop gallivanting around and getting into all these shooting scrapes with a couple old mossbacks like Salty and me.
I've had more fun the last year than all the rest of my life put together.
Well then, you got a mighty odd notion of fun, that's all I can say. I seem to recall nearly drowning in the ocean and being half froze to death and getting shot at a lot.
I guess it's the company I was keeping while that was going on that made it enjoyable.
Maybe so. But it's no life for a young woman.
Meg leaned her head against his shoulder.
Don't worry, Frank. I'm done. Not going to throw myself at you anymore. One of these days you're liable to regret not taking me up on it, though.
I don't doubt it for a second.
They sat there in companionable silence for a while. Back at the camp, Salty snorted loudly, then grew quiet.
Hear that? He rolled over.
Yeah. I guess I'd better go back and try to get some sleep.
Meg stood up. She rested a hand on Frank's shoulder and bent over to brush against his cheek.
Good night, Uncle Frank.
Get on with you.
She turned to walk back to the bedrolls. She was wrong about one thing, despite what he told her. He wouldn't regret this, because he knew he was doing the right thing.
But sometimes being an honorable fella is damned inconvenient.
Palmer had been following Joseph and Charlotte Marat all day without them being aware that he was anywhere around. Their Indian ancestors would have been ashamed of them for being so unobservant, Palmer thought. For one thing, they didn't appear to know what they were doing or where they were going. They roamed back and forth among the little valleys between the mountains, seemingly aimlessly. Maybe there was some method to their madness, but Palmer was damned if he could see it. He shook his head as he settled down to a cold supper on a ridge overlooking the Marat's camp.
This is crazy. I should be 20 miles closer to Calgary by now. Hopkins or that vengeful old-timer Stevens may be on my trail. Lingering around here is just giving them a chance to catch up to me.
But the mystery of those guns Marat mentioned intrigued him, and Charlotte's beauty intrigued as well. Often, guns were worth their weight in gold on the frontier. And if that was the case here, Palmer wanted to get his hands on some of that loot. Marat and Charlotte had stopped where the ground swelled up into a thick stand of pine trees on top of the ridge. Palmer's horses were on the far side of those pines, picketed so they could graze but not wander off. The shadows were already thick enough to hide him, so after he had eaten, he crawled over to a spot where he could look down the hill at the camp. He placed his rifle on the ground beside him as he lay on his belly. They had built a big fire again, just as they had the night before. They wanted to be found, Palmer realized, as he avidly watched Charlotte prepare supper. That was why they had been wandering around all day. Someone was supposed to meet them in this area, but they didn't know exactly where. So they just drifted, thinking that sooner or later they were bound to run into whoever was searching for them. They had built the fire for the same reason, to guide whoever was supposed to rendezvous with them to the camp. That would be the person or persons who had the guns, Palmer speculated. The situation made sense now, even though he didn't know all the details yet.
So, all I gotta do is sit back and wait.
When the right moment came, he would make his move. In the meantime, he had to suffer the torture of watching Charlotte Marat walk around down there. Her long dark hair, the curves of her body in the tight-fitting shirt and jeans, the sensuous grace with which she moved. Those were maddening reminders of just how long it had been since he'd been with a woman. The smell of coffee and bacon didn't help matters either. He was hungry for more than Charlotte.
Guns and gold, man. Remember why you're here.
Under the circumstances, he couldn't help but be distracted. So he didn't know anyone else was around until the cold, unyielding ring of a gun muzzle suddenly pressed against the back of his neck.
Don't move, you son of a bitch, or I'll kill you.
Palmer's breath froze in his throat, and his heart seemed to stop dead in his chest. He knew how dangerous it was not to pay close attention to everything around him, and yet he had done that anyway, had let his brain be consumed by the thoughts of the woman, the guns, and the gold.
Take it easy. There's no need to shoot.
Yeah, we'll decide about that.
From the corner of his eye, Palmer saw a hand pick up his rifle. At the same time, somebody else plucked the revolver from the holster on his hip. He still had a knife and a small hideout gun on him, but they wouldn't do much good if he was outnumbered, as he seemed to be. He put the number of his captors at 3, maybe more. The gun muzzle went away from his neck. He heard men moving around and figured they had stepped back so they could cover him better.
All right, get on your feet.
Suddenly, something about that voice struck Palmer as familiar. He knew he had heard it before, although not at any time recently. As he climbed awkwardly to his feet, well aware that the guns were pointing at him while he did so, he racked his brain in an attempt to figure out who the voice belonged to. The memory burst on his brain like an exploding shell. He started to turn around to see if he was right.
Hold it! Don't try anything funny.
I wasn't going to. Owen? Owen Lundy, is that you?
What the hell? Who are you?
It's me, Owen, Joe Palmer. I haven't seen you since Chicago, but I heard you were up here in this part of the world.
Joe Palmer? Can't be. I heard Palmer got himself hanged in Alaska.
You heard wrong. It's me, all right. Let me turn around. You can see for yourself.
All right, but take it slow and easy. And keep your hands where I can see them, and no tricks!
Palmer kept his open hands elevated to shoulder height and swung around so that he could look at the men who had snuck up on him. 3 of them stood close by, covering him with pistols and rifles, while farther back, dim blurs in the shadows, several more men waited. The moon had risen and provided enough light for Palmer to see the man who took a step toward him holding a leveled revolver. The man had a craggy face, along with white hair and bushy side whiskers under a black Stetson. Palmer knew him without any doubt as Owen Lundy.
Last time I saw you, you weren't dressed like a cowboy, Owen. It was in a dive on State Street in Chicago, and you looked like a real swell.
Well, as I live and breathe, by God, it really is you.
He lowered the hammer on his gun and holstered the weapon. With a motion to the men with him, he went on.
Take it easy, boys. This is Joe Palmer, an old friend of mine.
Lundy stepped forward and held out his hand. Palmer clasped it firmly.
It's good to see a familiar face out here in the middle of nowhere, Owen. I'll bet you got something to do with that pear camp down there, don't you?
Oh, damn it, he knows what's going on, Lundy. We can't take any chances.
Put that gun down, I told you. This man can be trusted.
It may be so, but I ain't fond of the idea of carving up another share out of the payoff.
Well, nobody said anything about that. Whatever you fellas have going on, I don't want to horn in on it.
That was a bald-faced lie, of course.
You let me worry about the shares, Radford. Unless you think you'd rather start running things around here.
I never said that, Owen. Well, this job's gone all right so far with you in charge. Except for that business with Blake.
Jericho?
Palmer remembered Lundy's old partner.
Is he here too, Owen?
No. He didn't make it.
The soldiers killed him.
That's enough.
Lundy looked again at Palmer, who sensed the tension in the air.
You better tell me what you're doing here, Joe. It's one hell of a coincidence that 2 fellas who know each other from the old days in Chicago wind up bumping noses in the Canadian Rockies.
Not so much of a coincidence. I was on my way to Calgary to look for you. I'd heard that you and Jericho were operating around there now.
What's your connection with those 2 breeds?
There's not any, except that I met them last night. We just talked and then went our separate ways, though.
Did they tell you what they're doing up here?
Not a word.
Mm-hmm. But you've been trailing them, haven't you? You think you're onto something that might wind up with a big payoff.
Well, they mentioned something about guns. And you're supplying them, aren't you, Owen? What did you do, slip down across the border and steal a shipment of rifles from the U.S. Army? Is that how Jericho got killed?
His excitement grew, but he tried not to let it show.
Those 2 kids are carrying the money to buy those guns from you, aren't they?
You always were a smart son of a bitch. You think you got it all figured out?
I don't.
Not all of it. We didn't steal a shipment of rifles from the Army.
No? Then what did you steal?
Just 4 guns. 4 very special guns.
Over a breakfast fire Meg set up, the three companions plotted out their day. A day that started with the sound of a Gatling gun firing about a quarter mile away.
I think we ought to hole up here for the day like we planned. That'll give those other folks, whoever they are and whatever they're up to, time to move on out of these parts.
You're not going to go looking for them?
I reckon not. There's no reason for us to get mixed up in their business.
Salty frowned as he raked his fingers through his beard.
Well, I've been thinking about that, Frank. You know, I used to do some range detecting, and I helped out the law more than once. And it sort of rubs me the wrong way to stand aside when there's something shady going on.
We don't know that there is.
No, but there's one thing you can be dang sure about. Anybody who wants to get his hands on one of them devil guns is planning on doing a whole heap of killing. 300 rounds a minute? I just can't imagine it.
That was exactly the thought that had gone through Frank's mind earlier.
I think Salty's right, Frank. Now that I've thought about it, I'm not sure we ought to just ride away from here. What if those people are planning to use those guns to ambush a bunch of Mounties or even attack a town full of innocent people?
It's not our job to stop them.
Maybe not. But when a fella sees something wrong happening, sometimes he's got to step in.
Or she.
Frank didn't argue anymore. Instead, he grinned.
I'm glad you two feel that way. I don't reckon we can turn our backs on this either. But we've got to be smart about what we do next. I think the two of you should stay here while I go take a look around. If I can find the bunch that has the guns now, we can follow them and try to find out what their plan is.
You better be careful, Frank. I don't figure they'd take kindly to being spied on. You saw how quick they was to grab me and Meg yesterday. And they're going to be even proddier now that you killed one of them.
I plan on being careful. Let's get one of those horses saddled up.
When he had the animal ready to ride, he took hold of the reins and led the horse toward the mouth of the canyon. Salty and Meg came along with him.
The two of you lie low and stay alert. I'll be back later.
It's a shame we can't do nothing about them smugglers. I reckon it's better if we follow the guns, though.
There's nothing we can do about the guns being stolen. That's already happened. But maybe we can stop them from being used to slaughter innocent folks.
He pushed some of the brush far enough aside to lead the horse through the gap he created. When he was gone, Salty and Meg could pull the brush back into place and make sure the canyon mouth was concealed again. He stepped into the open. Earlier that morning, just as the sun was about to creep up over the horizon to the east, Joseph Marat had opened his eyes and found himself staring down the barrel of a pistol. He started to jerk upright and reach for the revolver on his hip or the rifle lying on the ground beside him. But the gun muzzle suddenly pressed hard against his head.
Don't try it, boy. I don't want to blow your brains out, but I will if I have to. Reckon I can always do business with your sister if you're not around anymore.
Don't shoot. I won't give you any trouble.
Didn't think so.
The man lifted the gun away from Joseph's forehead and straightened from where he had crouched beside the sleeping man. Joseph saw a big man dressed like an American cowboy with a black hat, denim trousers, and jacket. He wore bushy white side whiskers, and his face looked as if it had been carved out of a particularly rugged piece of sandstone. Nor was he alone. Several other men clustered around the camp, and Joseph felt a sudden surge of fear for his sister. He jerked his head from side to side, looking for her.
Charlotte!
Take it easy, Joe. Your sis is fine. Nobody's gonna hurt her.
In the weak light, Joseph saw a man in a derby hat holding Charlotte's arm. The man's other arm was around her waist, pinning her to it. To his surprise, Joseph recognized the man holding Charlotte as Joe Palmer, the American who had been spying on their camp two nights earlier.
I should have known you were with them. I knew you didn't just stumble over us.
That's where you're wrong. It was just a coincidence, sure as shooting. The woods are full of them these days, seems like.
Yeah, he's right. Stand up, boy. We got business to conduct. Keep your hands away from your guns, though.
Joseph obeyed the order, climbing stiffly to his feet and scowling at the strangers as he did so. He could see now that there were seven or eight of them, and they were all hard-faced, roughly dressed men who held their guns with an air of long and frequent use. He and Charlotte were a pair of sheep in the company of ravenous wolves, Joseph thought. But they had one advantage over sheep. They were the key to something these wolves wanted. Gold. He looked at Palmer.
Let go of my sister!
I'm not hurting her. I just grabbed hold of her to keep her from running around and getting into trouble.
The white-haired man made a curt gesture to Palmer.
Let her go.
Clearly, Palmer didn't like the order, but he followed it. He took his hands off of Charlotte and stepped away from her.
Hope I didn't offend you, Miss Marat.
Palmer reached up and touched the brim of his derby. She looked away from him pointedly and didn't acknowledge what he'd said. The white-haired man faced Joseph.
Palmer tells me your name is Marat.
Joseph Marat. This is my sister, Charlotte.
I'm pleased to make your acquaintance.
Just then, the man seemed to realize he was still holding his revolver. He slid the heavy blue steel gun back into its holster.
My name's Lundy. Owen Lundy.
You are the ones we came to these mountains to meet? We were not given any names.
We're the fellas you came to meet, all right. We got what you want.
Joseph looked around.
I see no pack animals.
A humorous grin etched even more lines into Lundy's face.
You don't reckon we'd bring the guns with us to the rendezvous, do you? That's not the way we do business, my rot. Where's the gold?
Joseph was scared, but he forced himself to look and sound calm and cool-headed.
That is not the way we do business. First, we see the guns.
Lundy's features darkened with anger. He took a step closer to Joseph.
You didn't bring the gold?
Joseph steeled himself not to retreat in the face of the American outlaw's wrath.
We can get the gold whenever we need it, but not until we've examined the guns and found them to be everything you promised.
Oh, they're everything I promised, all right. They'll spit out more slugs in the blink of an eye than you can count.
Show me.
Bring up the mules.
Joseph watched with rapt attention as the man took down a couple of the crates and pried the lids off of them. From the packing straw inside, they lifted out bundles wrapped in oilcloth. When they folded back the oilcloth on one of the bundles, the gleaming barrels of a Gatling gun came into view. The barrels, arranged in a circle, had an aura of death and destruction about them, Joseph thought. Or perhaps he was being too poetic.
These weapons are mounted on wheeled carriages. The Army's been experimenting with making them a little lighter in weight and easier to move around. They've taken out the cotton packing from around the barrels that had to be soaked in water to keep the gun from overheating. Turns out the air cools it enough.
Joseph watched the men build gun carriages as Lundy continued.
Once it's set up, it's pretty mobile. A couple of men can pick up that tongue in the back and turn it around or wheel it from place to place. You don't have to have horses to pull it or even to transport it. Several men can do the job if they have to, once the gun's broken down. And you can see for yourself that it doesn't take all that long to set it up again. Anyway, if you set it up where you want to do your shooting, you shouldn't have to move it much.
You brought ammunition?
Lundy pointed to one of his men.
Get those sticks of bullets.
The man brought out a pair of long, narrow metal magazines that fitted into loading slots on the top of the weapon. The magazines held bullets that fed into the chambers as the barrels revolved and the gun fired.
Once your loaders get the hang of it, the thing will fire 400 rounds a minute without much problem. The gun can actually handle close to 1,000 rounds a minute without jamming or overheating, but men can't reload that fast. You'll need 3 men on each gun, a couple to load and one to turn the firing crank.
Lundy pointed out the wooden-handled crank attached to the body of the weapon.
Set up 4 of them around a target, and you can pour more than 1,500 rounds a minute into it. That'll shoot holes in just about anything and blow it to hell in a hurry. And it'll mow down the Mounties like weed in a field.
They used a Gatling gun against my people the last time we tried to fight for our rights. It is only fair we use such weapons against them.
Well, that's none of my business.
Lundy waved a hand at the gun.
Well, there it is. How about that gold?
Does it work? I have to see how it works.
Try it yourself.
You mean it?
It's loaded and ready to go. Just turn the crank, like I said.
Joseph couldn't resist the temptation. He glanced over at Charlotte. She looked apprehensive, as if she didn't like this at all. But she didn't shake her head to tell him he shouldn't. Joseph approached the Gatling gun carefully. as if it were a wild animal that might viciously attack without any warning. As he grasped the crank's handle, he bent down and squinted along the barrels to see where the gun was pointing. It was aimed across the valley at a stand of pines. There might be some small animals and birds in those trees, he thought, but that was their misfortune. He took a deep breath and turned the crank, hard and fast. The shots roared out so close together, it was hard to tell them apart. The rear brace shuddered from the recoil. The rate of fire slowed slightly and then picked up again, depending on how fast Joseph turned the crank. Across the valley, branches jerked and chunks of bark flew as the bullets chewed into the trees with ferocious power.
You're empty.
Joseph turned toward the outlaw in amazement. He had heard stories about these weapons, of course, but he had never seen one in action until now. It was awe-inspiring in its devastation. He peered across the valley and saw the scattered branches and the huge holes the bullets had gouged into the tree trunks. If those trees were men, they would be lying dead on the ground now in bloody heaps, shot to pieces. Joseph turned to his sister. Charlotte still had her hand over her ears, where she clapped them when the shooting started.
Do you want to try?
She lowered her hands and shook her head. She was pale and looked a little sick.
No. I don't mind guns, but this is evil.
Nonsense. This is exactly what we need.
Joseph looked at Lundy.
Can we reload it and shoot it again?
Sure. This time my boys will show you how to load it, and you can do it yourself.
Joseph spent a while familiarizing himself with every part of the gun's apparatus. He found himself fascinated by it. He thought not so much about the bloody havoc it was capable of wreaking, but more about what a mechanical marvel it was. He had to learn all he could about it, so he would be able to teach his comrades among the Métis how to use the weapons.
We brought plenty of ammunition, but you don't need to be wasting it.
One more magazine.
He cranked through those shells as well, watching with avid interest as several large branches fell off the pines. The hail of bullets sawed them loose. When the Gatling gun fell silent again, Lundy eyed Joseph.
All right. You've seen what this thing can do. It's time for you to keep your part of the bargain, Barat. Where's our gold?
That fella you sent out to scout the area is coming back, Owen.
Joseph looked around and saw a man riding up the valley toward them. When the man reached the camp, he reined in and swung down from his horse. He wore an excited look on his face.
What is it?
We got some spies up the valley a ways, holed up in a little box canyon. They pulled some brush up in front of the canyon mouth to hide it, and I might not have even seen it if I hadn't spotted some old pelican wandering around. I watched them go back through the brush, and I slipped up to take a closer look. I think there are several people in there.
Frank dove backward. The horse reared up, screaming in agony as slugs pounded its body. The animal shielded Frank as he rolled across the ground into the brush. Then one of the bullets struck the horse in the head, ending its pain and sending it toppling over backward. Frank had to scramble to keep the horse from falling on it. Slugs tore through the brush. Frank broke free of the brushy barrier into the canyon.
Get down!
He saw that they had already dived behind the log barricade. He joined them, vaulting over the logs and landing hard on the ground behind them. The jolt went all the way through him, and his hat went flying.
What in blazes is going on? Did we wander into the middle of a dad-blamed war?
It sure sounds like it.
The one thing they had on their side was that the brush across the canyon mouth concealed their position from the attackers. Whoever was using the Gatling gun was sweeping the fire back and forth across the canyon mouth rather than concentrating his shots on the barricade. That was good, because at the rate those bullets were coming, after a while, they might begin to penetrate the barricade if they were all aimed straight at it.
Blast it! This is all my fault! Somebody must have spotted me when I was out scouting around earlier.
Frank had already figured out the same thing, although he hadn't seen any point in bringing it up.
Shoot! We wouldn't even be here if I hadn't wanted to come after that varmint Palmer.
Nobody forced us to come with you. We're here because we wanted to be. Go! Well, maybe we don't want to be in this exact spot.
The Gatling gun stopped firing. Frank figured the men who'd been using it would venture into the canyon to find out if anyone was left alive in here. He looked back over his shoulder. He already knew there was no real cover in the canyon. That was why he and Salty built the log barricade. But while the logs would do a fine job of stopping rifle fire, they wouldn't stand up to an all-out assault from the Gatling gun. Frank knew that, but he also knew they had no choice but to play the hand they were dealt. He would try to keep the attackers out of the canyon as long as he could. As long as they couldn't get a good look at the setup in here, they wouldn't know what bad shape the defenders were in. Frank rested the Winchester on top of the logs and nestled his cheek against the smooth wood of the stock as he peered over the sights. He trained the rifle on the brush they had dragged up in front of the canyon mouth and waited. Several tense minutes ticked by. A rifle barrel appeared, pushing some of the branches aside. The rifle's owner was being cautious. Frank held his fire. He wanted the man to show himself. A coarse, unshaven face appeared under a floppy-brimmed felt hat. The man started to step through the gap he had made in the brush.
Get him?
Frank worked the Winchester's lever.
I did.
Salty ducked his head.
At this rate, them varmints are gonna burn up 1,000 bullets before sundown.
More than that. With one of those contraptions, it only takes a few minutes to fire 1,000 rounds.
That's a lot of lead and gunpowder to spend on just 3 folks.
You're right. It's almost like they got a personal grudge against us, whoever they are. Like they're bound and determined to root us out of here.
But that didn't make any sense, he thought. They didn't know anybody in Canada, except...
Palmer!
Salty looked over sharply at him.
What's that you say, Frank?
I was just wondering if it may be Joe Palmer is out there with that bunch. We know from what Hopkins told us that Palmer has friends up here on this side of the border. Maybe he didn't have to go all the way to Calgary to meet up with them.
Salty took off his hat and scrubbed a hand over his face.
Dag nabbit! That'd explain why they're coming after us so fierce-like. If Palmer's with them and knows I'm in here, he dang sure want me dead, and anybody who was with me. That's just one more reason I'm to blame for this whole blasted mess.
Do you think they'll try to get in here again?
Maybe.
Frank started to lift his head to take a look over the logs. They were under attack again, but from a different direction this time.
What the?
Frank spun around, lifting the Winchester. He spotted a man on the rim rock above the canyon. The man had a rifle in his hands and had already levered another shell into the chamber. Flame spurted from the weapon's muzzle as he fired a second shot. Frank's Winchester blasted a split second later. The man on the rim rock doubled over as Frank's bullet punched into his guts. He dropped his rifle, staggered to the side, and lost his balance. He toppled off the edge and plunged toward the canyon floor.
Salty, are you all right?
Salty clutched his left arm, where blood stained the sleeve of his faded flannel shirt.
I'm fine. Dang, Buzzard just nicked me.
Let me see.
Frank, there's another one!
Frank reacted instantly, lifting his rifle to draw a bead on the bushwhacker, but he knew he was going to be too late. The whip crack of a shot split the air, but it didn't come from the man on the rim rock. Instead, a bullet hit him from behind and drove him forward. Frank could tell that much by the way the man arched his back and threw his arms in the air. The rifle flew from his hands, unfired. The man plummeted in silence. A grim silence that told Frank the man was probably dead already. A figure appeared on the rim rock holding a rifle. Frank was about to snap a shot at him when the man lifted the Winchester over his head one-handed and waved it back and forth in a signal of some sort. With the way the light was, Frank couldn't tell much about the man. He was mostly just a silhouette. But he disappeared without firing again, fading back out of sight.
What in Hades just happened?
I'm not sure, but I think we got a friend up there.
A friend? You just said we didn't know nobody in Canada except Palmer. He dang sure ain't our friend.
Anybody who wants to keep those rascals from killing us is a part, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I can't argue with that, I reckon.
Frank lifted his head. The rifle shot had come from somewhere up on the ridge to the left of the canyon mouth.
He's up there somewhere. He can see the Gatling gun, and he plugged the man turning the crank.
They'll try to roust him out in a minute.
Frank's grip on the Winchester tightened.
More than likely. When they do, I'm gonna get up on the other rim rock.
He nodded toward the right side of the canyon. The wall was steep, but a man could climb it if he was careful.
Frank, you can't do that. If they start shooting in here again while you're halfway up there, You won't have a chance.
I'll have to move fast. Anyway, once you've got one of those Gatlins set up, you can't change the aim as quick as you can with a rifle or a handgun. You have to pick up the back of the carriage and turn the whole thing.
The rifleman on the rimrock fired again.
They're probably trying to get the gun adjusted now, and he's trying to pick them off while they're doing it. I'm going.
Frank ran to the right side of the canyon. It took only a moment to reach the steep wall. He took his belt off and ran it through the rifle's lever to make a crude sling that went around his neck. Reaching up, he grabbed the projecting rock, found a toehold, and began to climb. When the hellish hammering of the Gatling gun filled the air again, Frank kept climbing, pausing only long enough to glance over his shoulder and catch a glimpse of the slugs throwing up dust and grit as they smashed into the rimrock on the other side of the canyon. Just as Frank had expected, the attackers had swung the weapon's revolving barrels toward their mysterious benefactor. In the face of that onslaught, the rifleman would have to withdraw if he could. That gave Frank time to reach the top, though. He pulled himself up the last few feet and rolled over the edge into the boulders that littered the top of the ridge. From there, he could look across the narrow canyon and see that the other side was just as rocky. He caught a glimpse of a figure huddled in the lee of a rock slab that protected him from the hail of lead. A ricochet might still find the man, but he was relatively safe where he was. Frank could see Salty and Meg from where he was, too. Meg was tying a bandana around Salty's wounded arm as a crude bandage. The old-timer gestured up toward Frank with his other arm. Meg turned her head to look, and Frank gave them a wave and a grin to let them know he was all right. Then he crawled forward, searching for a spot where he could look out into the valley and maybe get a shot at the murderous bastards manning the Gatling gun. A few moments later, he spotted the rapid fire. It was set up at the edge of a clump of trees. Flame licked from its muzzle as each of the revolving barrels lined up with it in turn and fired its cartridge. Frank pulled his rifle up where he could use it and tried to draw a bead on the man turning the gun's crank. The wheels of the carriage and the body of the weapon itself gave him some cover. But there weren't many better shots on the frontier than Frank Morgan. He lifted his sights on an exposed shoulder. The man flopped backward, howling from the pain of a broken shoulder as the Gatling gun stopped firing. Frank saw another man dart forward. The second man staggered back into the shadows under the trees. Frank could hear the attackers arguing among themselves now.
That's always a good thing.
Their options were limited. They could turn the Gatling gun toward him and try to kill him, but if they did that, the rifleman on the other side of the canyon could open up on them again. Frank held his fire and waited to see what they were going to do. Incoming rifle fire forced Frank to duck low behind the rocks. He suspected the same thing was happening on the other side of the canyon, but he didn't risk a look. The men down in the valley were throwing a lot of lead up here, but nothing compared to what they had been doing with the Gatling. Frank figured this was just covering fire, so they could move the rapid fire. When he edged his head up for a look during a lull in the shooting, he saw he was right. The Gatling gun was gone. Hearing horses moving off, Frank figured the attackers were cutting their losses and lighting a shuck before they lost too many more men.
Unless they're pulling some sort of trick. I'll give it some time before I decide about that.
The sun had climbed high in the sky by now, although it was still morning. The temperature had risen as well. It was actually getting hotter up here on the Rim Rock. Frank sleeved sweat off his forehead, then leaned forward suddenly and squinted into the distance. As he watched, a whole line of men on horseback came into view, heading east, away from the canyon. They were probably half a mile down the valley, Frank judged. Some of the men were leading what appeared to be pack mules. His earlier hunch was right. They were leaving.
Salty! Meg! The two of you all right?
We're fine! What about you?
Yeah, I'm coming down. They're gone!
Before he started the descent, Frank looked across the canyon at the other side of the rimrock. The man he had seen there earlier was gone. Frank never got a good look at him, and he couldn't help but wonder where the hombre was now. He could try to figure that out later. Right now, he wanted to get down from this rocky perch.
What happened to that other fella?
Don't know. Lost sight of him. But he's still got to be around somewhere close by.
Frank nodded toward Salty's wounded limb.
How's the arm?
Aches a mite, but it'll be fine.
How about you, Meg? You hurt?
Well, my ears are still ringing a little from all that racket, but other than that, I don't have any complaints.
What are you thinking we ought to do now?
I'd like to go after that bunch. I don't much cotton to being shot at, so I reckon they got a whole heap of marks chucked up against them right now.
Dang right. Besides, if what we were saying earlier is right, there's a chance Palmer is with them, and I still got a score to settle with that polecat.
What do you say?
I say I don't like to be shot at either.
You know the odds are against us. We downed a few of them, but they still outnumber us.
And they got them devil guns. But I vote we go after them anyway.
Meg nodded again.
I reckon it's settled then.
The sound of hoofbeats nearby made him turn toward the brush piled in front of the canyon. It had been shot up so much by the Gatling gun that it wasn't much of a barrier anymore. They could see the rider reining in there. Frank covered the man as he swung down from the saddle and pushed through the branches into the canyon.
Howdy. Looks like you folks are all right. I'm glad to see that.
Well, I'll swan. What circus did you escape from, mister?
Charlotte looked like she was going to be sick, and Joseph Marat felt that way himself. He had not expected the sort of wanton slaughter he witnessed. And yet he told himself the change that he and his friends wanted so fervently could not come without violence. The oppressive representatives of the British Empire understood only one thing, deadly force. But despite the firepower they possessed, things hadn't worked out exactly like Owen Lundy and Joe Palmer thought they would. Those people in the canyon, Palmer's enemies, had put up more of a fight than they expected. Now, as they retreated, the only ones who had died were some of Lundy's men. The three outlaws sent to the canyon failed to come back. Lundy was angry about it, too.
You cost me three men with that wild scheme, Palmer.
Joseph and Charlotte rode right behind Lundy and Palmer. Then the other outlaws strung out in a line, leading the pack mules loaded down with the disassembled Gatling guns. The rapid firer they had put together earlier was still on its wheeled carriage. It had been turned around, and the rear brace had been lifted so it could be tied to one of the mules. The stolid animal pulled the gun behind it.
They must have had some place to fort up in there. Otherwise, we would have got them. We poured enough lead into that canyon to wipe out anybody in it.
Yeah, well, that ain't the way things worked out, is it? From now on, Joe, I'll be doing all the thinking around here.
Damn it, going after Stevens and his friends was your idea, Owen.
Palmer waved a hand behind him at Joseph and Charlotte.
You wanted to show off for these two.
For a second, Joseph thought Lundy was going to reach for his gun. He was ready to grab Charlotte and hustle her away from the line of fire if gunplay broke out between Lundy and Palmer.
I guess that's three less shares we'll have to take out of the goal.
That's the best way to look at it, all right.
Lundy didn't rein in, but he turned halfway around in the saddle to look at Joseph.
Speaking of gold, where are those friends of yours? I'd like to get this over with.
They should be along soon.
Joseph hoped nothing had happened to Anton and the other members of the group. The plan had been that Anton and the others would keep the gold with them while Joseph and Charlotte met the men who were bringing the guns across the border and would examine the merchandise. When Joseph was satisfied the guns were what they had been promised, he would signal Anton and they would rendezvous to make the payment and take delivery of the Gatlings. A short time after riding away from the canyon, Joseph had given the signal. Three quick shots, a pause, then two more shots. Anton should have been alert for it. He had to know that something was going on. The noise of the Gatling gun had been so loud it seemed to Joseph that it could have been heard as far away as Calgary. Anton Mirabeau was a cautious man, though. That was why he had been entrusted with the safekeeping of the gold. He was probably watching them right now, Joseph thought, waiting to make sure that everything was all right before he showed up with the payoff. Joseph hoped that was the case, because Lundy was getting impatient. He had seen with his own eyes how ruthless the American could be, and he was worried about what might happen to him and Charlotte if everything didn't go as planned. Lundy might seek vengeance if he didn't get his hands on that gold soon.
Who do you reckon was in that canyon with the old man, Palmer?
I don't know for sure.
The last time I saw Stevens before I ran into him in Powder Keg Bay was over in Skagway. And then he was hanging around with a fella named Morgan. I don't know if the two of them are still pards or not.
Not Frank Morgan, I hope.
Well, yeah.
That was enough to make Lundy haul back on his reins and bring his horse to a stop. He turned angrily toward Palmer.
Frank Morgan the gunfighter? The one they called a drifter?
Yeah, that's him.
You loco son of a bitch! Frank Morgan's one of the most dangerous men west of the Mississippi. Don't you think it might have been a good idea to tell us exactly who we were going up against?
I don't know for sure that Morgan is still traveling with the old coot. Morgan wasn't with him in that saloon in Powder Keg Bay.
That doesn't mean he wasn't somewhere close by.
Frank Morgan will die just as quickly as any other man if he goes up against one of those Gatling guns.
Maybe, maybe not. If he was back there in that canyon with Stevens, he's probably still alive. Damn it, Palmer, I never bargained on having Frank Morgan on my trail.
Don't worry about it. Pretty soon you'll have the gold those half-breeds promised you. You can get out of this part of the country.
Joseph felt a surge of anger at the contemptuous way Palmer referred to him and his people, including his sister. But he suppressed the urge to say something. There was already enough tension in the air without adding to it.
Jericho and me had a pretty good setup in Calgary. I'm not sure I want to leave it behind just like that.
You'll be rich enough to go wherever you want. Hell, the two of us could go back to Chicago. We'd be big men there now, Owen. We'd be running all the gangs on the south side within a year.
Lundy didn't look convinced of that at all.
We'll see. First, we got to get our hands on that gold we've been promised.
He turned in the saddle again to give Joseph a hard, meaningful look.
The gold is coming.
Joseph lifted a hand to point at the riders he had just spotted emerging from a thick growth of trees up ahead.
There!
It is Anton and the others!
It was accepted by many who knew them that Charlotte and Anton would be married someday. Joseph wasn't so certain that was a good idea. Anton Mirabeau was a good man to have as an ally, brave and devoted to the Métis cause, but he was also reckless and could be brutal at times. Joseph wasn't sure he wanted his sister to be married to a man like that. Charlotte had a mind of her own, though, and a stubborn streak a mile wide. Joseph was content to bide his time, hoping that eventually Charlotte would come to realize Anton wasn't the right man for her. Since the party led by Lundy and Palmer had already halted, they waited where they were and let Mirabeau and the others come to them. Joseph counted the riders and realized with a shock that one man was missing. Joseph hoped the man was just out scouting and that nothing had happened to him. Mirabeau and the others reined in when they were about 20 yards away. The big, black-bearded man raised a hand in greeting and smiled.
Joseph! Charlotte! It is good to see you again. You are all right?
We're fine, Anton! You heard our signal?
Yes. We heard what sounded like a little war, too. What happened?
We were just demonstrating the Gatling guns for your friends.
Burning up ammunition that we will be paying for.
You're still getting a damn good deal.
Perhaps in light of these developments, the deal should be changed.
Joseph stiffened with worry. This was just like Anton, he thought, going off on some wild tangent that would just wind up causing trouble. Lundy didn't like it either. Joseph could tell that from the way the outlaw straightened in the saddle and moved his hand slightly toward the butt of the gun on his hip. The Métis outnumbered the Americans 6-5. 8-5 if he and Charlotte were counted, Joseph thought. But Lundy, Palmer, and the other men were all hardened criminals, well-versed in the art of killing. Mirabeau might succeed in refusing to hand over the gold and take the Gatling guns anyway, but it would be at a high cost in human life. In fact, they might all die, which would do nothing to help the cause.
Anton! There will be no change in our arrangements with these men. Mr. Lundy has kept his part of the bargain, and we will keep ours.
Mirabeau frowned at him. He didn't like being spoken to that way, and Joseph knew it. Joseph felt that he had no choice but to put a stop to this trouble before it blew up into violence. After a moment, Mirabeau shrugged brawny shoulders.
Fine. If you want to pay for bullets that have already been fired, it's your decision, Joseph. You're our leader, after all. You're the educated one.
Anger and resentment burned in Joseph over Anton's response, but he forced it down. More important things than his pride were at stake here.
If your men will open the other crates, Mr. Lundy, we will unload the gold.
You don't trust us that those other crates have Gatling guns in them?
As much as you trust us that we brought the right amount of gold.
Fair enough.
Lundy gestured toward the pack mules.
Bring them out, boys.
During the next 10 minutes, Lundy's men took down the crates from the pack mules, pried off the lids, and unwrapped the other Gatling guns. They opened the crates that contained thousands and thousands of rounds of ammunition as well.
Well, are you satisfied?
Mirabeau had dismounted. So had Joseph. Together, they examined the guns.
You know more about these things than I do. Does everything look as it should to you, Joseph?
Yes. We have what we need here to assemble 4 Gatling guns, as agreed.
Then let's see that gold. We've been patient enough.
Joseph didn't think Lundy had been all that patient, but he kept that opinion to himself. He and Mirabeau went over to the pack horse the other Métis had brought with them and lifted down the chests using the leather straps on their ends. Joseph knelt beside one of them and unfastened the catches that held the lid down. He opened it, revealing the gold bars stacked within.
That's mighty nice. Where did you get those bars?
That's none of your business.
As a matter of fact, it had taken a number of train holdups and bank robberies in various Canadian cities to assemble this much gold. In the eyes of the Northwest Mounted Police, he and his comrades were simply outlaws, common thieves, out for themselves. The Mounties had no idea the men who had taken these gold bars were revolutionaries, men who would forge a new nation for their people.
Open the other chest.
Mirabeau opened it. Lundy nodded in satisfaction when he saw the gold bars in it.
Looks like we got a deal. We'll throw in the pack mules. You'll need them to carry those Gatlings around.
Joseph closed the chests and fastened the catches.
What are you going to do with those guns anyway?
That is our business.
Sure. I was just curious, that's all.
You do know what killed the cat, don't you, Mr. Palmer?
Sure. Sure I do.
With the transaction complete, there was no need for the two groups to stay together. As soon as everything was loaded up again, they could go their separate ways. Lundy and his men were ready to leave first, since they only had the 2 chests of gold to deal with. They mounted up and set off without looking back. They continued heading east, toward the edge of the mountains and Calgary on the plains beyond.
We will let them get ahead of us, but not too far ahead.
Joseph looked at the man and frowned.
What are you talking about? Our business with them is done.
Slowly, Mirabeau shook his head and smiled. The expression was without warmth.
Now, Joseph, you didn't really think we were going to let them ride off and keep all that gold we worked so hard to steal, did you?
The last person Frank had seen dressed in such a gaudy outfit was Buffalo Bill Cody when he stopped in Chicago on his way to Boston a couple of years earlier. The old scout and Buffalo Hunter's Wild West show and extravaganza had been putting on performances at the Columbian Exposition there. They were a long way from Chicago now, but the cream-colored Stetson, fringed jacket, tight trousers with fancy stitching, and high-topped boots looked like something Cody might have worn. Instead, the owner of the Duds was a young man with a smiling, friendly face and wavy brown hair under the thumbed-backed Stetson. In his left hand, he held a Winchester with a gleaming barrel tipped back on his shoulder. An ivory-handled Colt rode in a holster on his right hip. He didn't seem offended by Salty's question.
No circus. I was just passing through these parts and heard what sounded like a mighty interesting ruckus. Name's Russell. Reb Russell, they call me.
You're too young to have been in the war.
Yes, sir. Fact is, I wasn't even born until a few years after it was over. But my pa, he was an officer in the Confederate Army, rode with Jeb Stuart, in fact, so I was sort of brought up in the tradition, you might say.
Russell's smile widened as he turned to Meg and took his hat off.
We haven't been introduced, ma'am, but I'm mighty pleased to meet you. Reb Russell, at your service.
I'm Meg Goodwin.
It's an honor.
You ain't going to kiss her hand, are you?
Not unless the lady asks me to.
Frank Morgan. I reckon that was you up on that rim rock taking a hand in the fight?
Yes, sir. I was riding back a ways behind this ridge when all the commotion started, so I thought I ought to see what was going on.
How did you know which side you ought to take?
Well, it's true I don't really know who you folks are or why those other folks were trying to kill you, but I just naturally sort of stick up for the underdog. I guess that comes from growing up in the South while the Yankees were having everything their way during Reconstruction.
A Texan, Frank fought for the Confederacy during the Civil War, but he had long since put that conflict behind him. As far as he was concerned, both sides had been so damned stubborn that the war was inevitable. And then, to make things even worse, the Yankees proved to be mighty poor winners. Nothing was going to be gained by dredging all that up now, on either side.
Anyway, I saw they had you outnumbered and outgunned. Then those bushwhackers climbed up on the ridge and tried to get you in a crossfire. Didn't seem like a very sporting thing to do.
Well, we appreciate the help. We can offer you some coffee and something to eat if you're hungry.
That sounds mighty fine.
Russell leaned his head toward the canyon mouth.
You don't think those varmints are liable to come back?
I'll stand watch. Y'all go ahead. That blame circus cowboy kissing hands. I'll show him a hand or two, all right.
The others started back toward the fire, which had burned down and gone out during the battle.
Tell you what, you two go on. I'd better do something about those bodies.
Neither of the men that fell from the Rimrock carried identification. Just a couple of hard cases. Yep, a couple of hard cases who might have gunned down Frank, if not for Russell. Thinking of Russell made Frank glance toward the camp. Meg had the fire going again and was heating up the coffee. He saw her and Russell talking. Frank didn't trust the stranger. Why was someone dressed like Russell wandering through these rugged Canadian Rockies by himself? That didn't make a lick of sense as far as Frank was concerned. But there was no denying Russell helped them out in a bad spot. If he hadn't given them a hand, they might not have been able to drive off the attackers. Maybe after he'd had his coffee and something to eat, Russell would go on his way, leaving them in the canyon. Frank wasn't going to count on that, though. And he wasn't going to take his eye off the man who called himself Reb Russell for very long, either. He walked back to the brush across the mouth of the canyon. Salty stood there, looking up and down the valley.
Nobody moving, far as I can see. Frank, I want to tell you again how sorry I am for getting you and Meg into this mess.
Don't worry about it, Salty. Like we told you, nobody forced us to come along.
Frank nodded toward the dead outlaw who lay out there.
Ever see him before?
Nope. Looks like a typical hard case. All gun and no brain.
Same as the two inside the canyon. You still think Palmer was with this bunch?
I got no earthly idea. It makes sense, though. And these are just the sort of ornery, no-good varmints he'd throw in with. He worked for Soapy Smith, after all, and Soapy was about as bad as they come.
You want to roll some rocks down on these three?
Salty scratched his beard.
I'd rather leave them for the wolves, but I reckon that wouldn't be fitting. We already left that fella you had to kill yesterday.
Frank, Salty, and Russell placed the bodies at the back of the canyon. After Frank and Russell loosened a little avalanche to cover the bodies and the dust settled, the small party stood at the makeshift gravesite.
Lord, I ain't much for speech, you fine, and I reckon it's more than likely these fellows went the other way instead of up yonder to your homestead. But wherever they wind up, we're putting that in your hands. It ain't for us to judge. Amen.
Amen.
Salty clapped his hat back on his head.
Now that's done. Let's get after them skunks. I sure don't take it kindly when somebody shoots at me.
Y'all going after them?
Dang right we are. I got a suspicion there's a fella with them who owes me money.
Do you even know why they tried to kill you?
We've got some ideas.
Well, if you don't mind the company, I'd be glad to come along with you. I've got my horse right outside the canyon, and I left my pack animal with my supplies not far from here when all the shooting started. I won't be a burden to you.
You don't have any business of your own to tend to?
Yeah, but those fellas headed east when they left here, didn't they? That's the way I was going anyway. I'm bound for Calgary.
What for, if you don't mind me asking?
Sure, it's no secret. There's talk that some of the cattlemen in those parts are fixing to put on a big rodeo there. I plan to take part in it.
Rodeo? I've been to the one down in Pecos a bunch of times. You mean to say they have such things up here in Canada?
They have rodeos anywhere. There's a bunch of cowboys getting together. There are ranches here in Canada just like there are down in the States. Say, Mr. Stevens, if you've been to the rodeo in Pecos, you might have seen me. I won the saddle bronc riding there 3 years running.
Salty's eyes widened in recognition.
Why, fry me for a gopher. I knowed there was something familiar about you. You rode that dang razor horse 4 or 5 years ago. The one everybody said was the killer and could never be rode.
That's right. The purse was a mighty good one that year.
Salty turned to Frank.
I know this boy now, Frank. He'll do to ride the river with.
I'm glad to hear it.
Frank had long since stopped being surprised when people ran into folks they knew out here on the frontier. The West, and that included this part of Canada too, he supposed, was a vast place. But at the same time, it was possible to encounter someone you might not have seen for years. The network of mutual acquaintances stretched over hundreds, even thousands of miles.
You're welcome to ride with us, Russell, but I warn you, we're liable to run into more trouble.
That's fine. Nothing I like better than a good scrape, Mr. Morgan. And call me Reb.
All right, Reb. Just as long as you know what you're getting into.
He wished he could say the same thing for himself. And despite the opinion of Reb Russell Salty expressed, Frank didn't fully trust the young man. There was something about him that still didn't ring true. They headed back to the fire.
They let you wear that kind of get-up to the rodeo these days?